Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxy, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Minus the Brian this afternoon, but that's okay. He is down in Chicago because Brian's got some his own news. He is starring in a upcoming action thriller movie, I believe. So Brian's got an acting gig down in Chicago. And we'll be able to share more about that in the future, but it's just going to lead to a little bit more time with Brian away. But he is hard at work when he's in his dressing room, I hear, helping this network of stations go out. And that network of stations that you're listening to right now is Devil Radio 92.7 FM here in Madison, The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM in Waukesha, Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, Wisconsin, that's 98.9 FM, 1230 AM, and Locally Grown Radio in Wisconsin Rapids, and that is 97.5 FM, 1320 AM. If you want to join the conversation today, share your tangent with me, 844-967-2789. But up first this afternoon, Wisconsin's primary was yesterday. The partisan primary was yesterday, and we have results to dive into. So the first person to come to mind that I wanted to talk to today with all of the results coming in is Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. But I can't even just keep that as his title now because he is also a featured opinion writer in the New York Times. Dan, how you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing pretty well, Luke. How are you?
I am. I didn't have to stay up that late, so I'm always grateful because I recall in 2018, I was refreshing the election results that night for both the, I don't think the primary, I guess, got too late, but the 2018 general was such a nail biter that it came down to like 1:30 in the morning, almost close to 2 a.m., I believe. And I'm just grateful we didn't have any races that close. Or there were actually are a few that are still outstanding, but none of the big top item statewide races came that close. And so I'm just grateful I didn't have to stay up that late.
Yeah, with all of the decimal point margins that we have in so many of our statewide elections in Wisconsin, it's always a little gift to the journalists for an early call, at least in the big races that we saw last night.
I think that just means, though, Dan, that there's going to be that many more that close races come November. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it's a trade-off. We'll be up till 4 a.m., you know, with the Senate race and the gubernatorial race this fall, right?
All of the print reporters that had deadlines this morning, though, I saw a lot of them logging off the internet at around 5 a.m. saying, good night, Twitter, or good night, Wisconsin. And so there were a handful of reporters that I felt terrible for because I was waking up about that time and saw that they were just finishing up work for the night still. And I was like, ooh, I do not envy that. But one of the races that could have got that close, and it was a little bit wider of a margin than I was anticipating. I was anticipating this race to be closer. But the gubernatorial GOP primary yesterday resulted in, I'm not going to lie, I thought it was going to go the other way, but Tim Michaels won that GOP primary, defeated former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, who had been running for the position for the better part of the last 4 years since she lost in 2018. And Tim Michaels has now won that Republican nomination, is going to go on to take on incumbent Democratic Governor Tony Evers this fall. What are your thoughts on that race specifically, Dan, to start off?
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said, Clayfish had such a head start and she had been running for so long since the minute Walker lost in 2018, it was clear that she was going to be running. And she has this long head start. She has, you know, the backing of a lot of the Republican establishment in Wisconsin. She got early endorsements from the likes of Robin Voss and Scott Walker and Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. So it's really felt like the establishment that had been, you know, largely running things in Madison for much of the 2010s was lining up behind her early, and it seemed like she, you know, was going to be the front runner and could sail through to the nomination. But, you know, it obviously didn't turn out that way. And it's a pretty stunning collapse and loss for her and for that Republican establishment.
And I think you can take a little bit of a victory lap, because you saw this coming back as early as, was it April or May, that you put out a piece over at the Recombobulation Area talking about how it wasn't actually going to be a coasting for the Clayfish campaign to that nomination.
Right. I think we saw, you know, she was just not able to consolidate support within the party. And it was around that time that kind of Michael jumped into the race, and like there was an early poll that put him neck and neck with Clayfish, even though he had just kind of jumped into the race. It seemed like, you know, it seemed like there was a certain part of the Republican Party in Wisconsin that just didn't want to get behind her. And, you know, there was all sorts of different ideas about who could run, and there was Bill McCoshin, and there was even flirtation with Tommy Thompson maybe coming
back. A
fifth
term, coming in for five, potentially.
Ryan Priebus was a name. There was, you know, all...
Sean Duffy got thrown in the race for a hot second. The former president threw his name in the ring, even though he and his family moved out to New Jersey.
Right, right. So it just seemed like they were just going on a hunt to find a not Clayfish candidate. They eventually get one. With Michaels, you know, he gets the endorsement from Tommy Thompson. I think there's a part of the Republican Party that was just not ready to back Clayfish, and they had to find somebody, and they found Michaels, who was able to self-fund. He got the Trump endorsement, which is obviously a big thing in a crowded primary among the Republicans. Kevin Nicholson drops out. I imagine there was a lot of his support that went Michaels' way, considering he was kind of the not Clayfish candidate in the mm-hmm. early running. And you know, Tim Ramthan's message of your votes don't count didn't quite connect,
apparently. Not running your entire campaign overturning 2020 was not the indicator that Ramthan wanted it to be, but still I believe got about 4.5% of the vote, I want to say. I'd have to double check that.
I'm looking at it right now. He got 6%. 40,000 votes.
40,000 votes for State Representative Tim Ramthan, which I believe would be way more than what he would have ever needed to get in his state assembly district. But he will no longer be representing that district since he did take the leap and run for governor. So I think the next steps for Timothy Ramthan will be interesting ones, and that's going to be something we're going to have to keep an eye on.
Do you think he'll try to decertify the primary results?
He was already so. An interesting aspect that as the Democratic field coalesced, it was one of those everybody was talking about that rather than some of the responses in one of the Republican primary debates. But they all said that they would accept the results of the election, and then like a few days later, Timothy Ramthan first was like, well, no, I'm not going to accept the results. I want a forensic audit now before it even happens. And he had iterated some aspect like that when he first announced. He was like, I'm calling for a forensic audit of this fall's elections now. And it's like, how do you possibly do that? Nobody's voted. Nobody even knows what a forensic audit is. That's just one of those buzz terms on right-wing social media sites and right-wing news sites that they have tossed around for the last couple of years. But I think the other interesting dynamic for the Timothy Ramthan sector is going to be that Adam Steen, Timothy Ramthan team up maybe, because the election results were way, way, way closer in Wisconsin's 63rd assembly district than I think
Shockingly close.
Do you think that Robin Voss had to change his undershirt at least a couple times for how much he was sweating yesterday as those results? Because he was losing for a decent portion of the night, and it wasn't until later when the results kind of flipped back into his favor, and then he coasted with, I believe, a 3 or 4 point lead to beat his primary challenger. And he's
less than 200 votes.
Less than 200. Okay, like, that's been updated. I think it was 250 this morning when I first looked to see what that margin was.
So it's like I had no illusions that Voss was in any kind of real trouble in that race. The fact that Adam Steen pushed it, I'm looking at the results now, 51% to 49%.
Okay, so it was a 2-point race. Oh my gosh.
Just very, I think, you know, you almost have to chalk that up as a loss for Voss, even though he's going to continue, because it's just like, it's just the stunning result how close it was.
He was popping champagne bottles to celebrate a 2-point victory for the state assembly speakers, overcoming a primary challenge that his campaign was launching scarecrow dummies with Voss's face on it earlier this week. Like, I don't understand how you're thinking that's a victory lap, but apparently the assembly speaker was more than happy to break out the bottles of champagne last night. Evan, we actually have a soundbite from Voss yesterday. This was by WTMJ, one of the local southeastern Wisconsin outlets. Evan, can you play that first one we got queued up right inside the room?
He's an embarrassment to the state. I hired him on recommendations, thinking that we were going to have somebody who was a good, articulate, independent voice. It was very clear in all of our discussions that he had a budget that he set for himself. We didn't say go here and don't go there. He set his own parameters. Then we asked two simple things: don't get involved in politics, and please try to make sure that you focus on the investigation, not being on TV. He couldn't help himself but to try to inject his own opinions into this race.
And so that was... You got to kill that extra sound. Thanks, Evan. I couldn't clean it quite up. I queued it, but I couldn't clean it up. But that was actually the WISN 12 outlet. Matt Smith, a reporter in southeastern Wisconsin, picked that up yesterday as Voss was leaving his campaign event. And so that was Voss talking about Michael Gableman endorsing Steen in that race. And I think that's one of the best little side stories of yesterday with how close that race was. Voss sounds like he's ready to fire Gableman, and that is... by far one of the best outcomes I think we could have all expected from yesterday's primary results.
Just complete disarray. Complete disarray.
I don't even think... I was labeling it earlier this week, Dan, as mutiny. It was just a mutiny of the Republican Party here in the state of Wisconsin, because I don't know if disarray is strong enough. But
yeah,
folks...
Well, they have only themselves to blame. They caused all of this.
That is absolutely true. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. I am joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area, also New York Times opinion columnist now. We're going to dive a little bit into that piece when we get back. You're listening on Devil Radio, The Shaw, Bull Falls Radio, and Locally Grown Radio. We'll be right back. Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian this afternoon because he is off adding to his acting portfolio. The man that I'd like to deem Brian a renaissance man, because he can literally do everything. And not only is he helping run a network of radio stations, he's also getting filmed or prepped for film in Chicago this week. I am joined, though, by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. Dan, I want to also credit the t-shirt. Love that we're wearing the Bucks gear. It is
always
excellent. I saw the highlights. I didn't get to see Giannis play yesterday, but I saw Greece, I think, played Spain in the Euros. Or is it Olympic?
Yeah.
What was the qualifier?
It was a friendly game between Greece and Spain, but Giannis treated it like it was game six of a playoff game and was running and dunking on everyone's face, and it was amazing.
I saw the best highlight that one of the Spanish players was trying to go up for a layup and could see Giannis coming in right behind him, and he just like threw it out back to the three-point line because he was like, no, I do not want to get stuffed right now by Giannis. and it was just a great sequence. Giannis ended up with the ball somehow still back in his hands, because that's just Giannis.
He's Giannis. Yeah.
But folks,
he's on another level.
He is. He absolutely is. And I can't imagine that is even a fair matchup for him against anybody in the competition that he's in right now. But you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. We tend to go down these tangents. We're dissecting the primary results from yesterday. Here in Wisconsin, voters went to the polls for the fall partisan primary. Voter turnout was sitting around 28%. which is pretty low. But then when you take a look at the snapshot of the past off-year primaries, it was pretty high, actually. It was, I believe, four or five points, I believe, higher than 2018. And 2018 was a pretty record turnout for an off-year primary. So that's good, but still, not a whole lot of the voting population went to the polls. One of the races that was highly watched for the last year or two since we left the 2020 cycle, which not everybody has. Some people are still really hung up on 2020. Especially, Dan, did you see this? The Clayfish campaign, her press passes for all of the media at the Clayfish watch party said August 9th, 2020.
Yeah, I did see that. It's just perfect. Absolutely perfect. No notes. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. And honestly, I think it was just a mistake, but just living in parody, like almost, because I couldn't picture anything. Like, I scrolled past it and missed it the first time. Like, I saw the main picture of it, and I was like, oh, okay, that's a press pass. And then the next time I saw it, I was like, wait a second. But one of those races that we were watching for the last year, kind of coalesced over the last 2 weeks, was the U.S. Democratic Senate primary. And Mandela Barnes was the presumed nominee, and yesterday confirmed that. And so now we're preparing for a media narrative around a Mandela Barnes-Ron Johnson matchup for November. And we've already seen, since the Democratic candidates dropped out and endorsed Barnes, there was some talks of, oh, is Barnes too liberal to win this race? Is this the candidate that Ron Johnson wanted? There are numerous takes nationally and here in Wisconsin. And you're pushing back on that, Dan, because you have an excellent opinion piece written over at the New York Times titled "Meet Mandela Barnes, the 35-year-old candidate working to oust Ron Johnson." So, Dan, tell me a little bit about the process of going through and writing this piece and why you think it's the important framing of the conversation that we need to be having ahead of November's election.
Yeah, so I think when you look at this race from a national perspective, and I think this race between Mandela Barnes and Ron Johnson is going to get a ton of national attention. I think one of the things that really distinguishes Barnes within the larger field of the people who are running in high profile midterm races is that he's young. He's 35 years old. You know, most of the other Democrats who are running this year are quite a bit older. And I think there is a distinct generational element to this race and to just kind of larger shifts happening nationally as well. I mean, I think we have very little representation for the millennial generation in Congress. There's only 31 members of the House who are millennials and only one millennial senator, John Ossoff of Georgia. So if Barnes were to win this fall, he would be only the second senator born in the 1980s. So I think there's a real distinct generational element to his campaign, to this race, and that, you know, that the way that the Democratic primary for Senate unfolded as well. I think a lot, you know, the other of the top three candidates, they're all of the millennial generation. And I think they all kind of brought a similar, you know, there was a lot of policy agreement among the candidates.
Well,
too.
And that was one of the hard parts for the last year was distinguishing between the candidates almost. And so there was a lot of agreement on those policy issues for the Democratic field. And the internal polling, though, showed that Mandela had a steady lead going into yesterday's primary. And so 2 weeks out, they decided, well, one campaign ran out of money. And then from there, the others decided they didn't want to go negative for their chance to win. And they coalesced around Mandela Barnes rather than trying to go dirty and fight, say, not as clean as we saw the campaign for the first year that it was running, first year and a half. And just real quickly here before the break then, Dan, what do you believe the major takeaway for the Barnes nomination? He yesterday said that he's just getting started. This is going to be something that he wants to, a fight that he wants to take. And he almost hinted at some of those generational changes between and differences between him and Ron Johnson. Do you believe that that's a winning message for him, or is it going to take that and a lot more for him to beat Ron Johnson this fall?
I think Johnson is going to be the favorite, but I do think that Barnes has a path, and part of that path is harnessing kind of a generational element to this race. You know, there's going to be eight colleges are going to be open for their most normal school opening in a long time fall. And so I think that's going to, you know, open the doors for more campus activism, especially, you know, post Roe ruling, that there are going to be people who are going to be really engaged. And I think,
I don't mean
you
to cut you off, Dan, but
there's a path to talk with young people. So
absolutely.
I think that is a big part of this race.
This is Dueling Tangents. Excellent point by Dan Schaefer. We will be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Minus the Brian this afternoon, but I got Evan on the board, and I am joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area, also recently featured last night on the homepage of the New York Times opinion columns. So congratulations again. I don't know if I can say congrats enough, Dan. That is awesome.
I appreciate it. Thank you. It's pretty wild. It's pretty wild.
And I got to assume that your mentions on Twitter are just blowing up at this point. Is it all... Is it pretty hectic?
There have been a few mentions on Twitter. Yeah, it's hard to keep up with, but it's fun. It's exciting.
Nice. And all those online friends wanted to tell you congrats as well. But we were, before we went to break, they're discussing your piece at the New York Times and talking about Mandela as a generational candidate for his race against Ron Johnson, what I believe even Republicans deem as the most vulnerable U.S. senator for the Republicans this cycle. He is, I believe, the only Republican running for re-election in a state that was won by Joe Biden in 2020. And for the last 2-3 years, he's been saying he's been a conspiracy theorist is the nicest way to put a lot of things. He's suggested ivermectin be used to treat COVID, or gargling with more mouthwash, using Listerine to treat COVID, and just from things like that all the way to this past week saying, well, let's put Social Security and Medicare back on the debate stage or the bargaining stage for an annual budget. It shouldn't be mandatory spending. Let's make it discretionary. And so I think that the differences between Mandela Barnes and Ron Johnson couldn't be more stark. But I think it's also important to point out the larger context of the U.S. Senate and where Mandela Barnes would fit into that picture if he were to be elected this November. And so you talk about generational change. He made a joke earlier on an interview appearance I listened to on a podcast earlier this week about how he would significantly decrease the average income or the average median wealth for the U.S. Senate as well if he were elected, because he's a working man. He's currently the lieutenant governor, previously served in the state assembly, but he's not a millionaire like Ron Johnson is. I believe, is Ron Johnson the second or third most wealthiest senator?
He is among the wealthiest senators, and Mandela Barnes will certainly not be on that list of the wealthiest senators. You know, he's talked about in his campaign wanting to break up the millionaires club that is the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a really important part of this race too, because I think he, you know, can give voice to lived experiences of growing up in a tough part of Milwaukee, as you know, coming of age is somebody from the working class. You know, his father was a third shift auto worker. His mother was a public school teacher. You know, that's not the type of experiences that we necessarily have represented in the United States Senate. And I think, you know, if we're trying to find solutions for working people, I think Barnes is going to be able to, you know, bring a perspective that's going to be really important to finding those solutions.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really, really key, you know, distinction between these candidates.
And it doesn't help in the last year that Senator Johnson said, when talking about 1,000 union paying jobs coming to Oshkosh, Wisconsin, the senator's hometown, his response was, Wisconsin's got enough jobs. I'm not going to put my thumb on the scale. I'm not going to tell Oshkosh Defense to build those here for the next-gen fleet of U.S. Postal Service vehicles. And I believe that contract is going to go to South Carolina instead of here in Wisconsin. So yeah, pretty stark difference there between the two candidates that will be on the ballot for U.S. Senator this fall.
And I think as you mentioned with Johnson too, I think, you know, over the last 2 years, you know, he was not that well known of a senator up until a couple of years ago, but he has really thrust himself into the spotlight with so many of the comments that he's made over the past couple of years. And one of the stats that I noted in my piece was that, you know, moderates are really not a fan of Ron Johnson. He has a 21% favorability rating among moderates in Wisconsin. Like, he has completely lost the center. So I think that is going to be an important part of this race too. Johnson is not a very well-liked candidate, and you know, Barnes is going to have a whole lot of opportunity to run against so many of the things that Ron Johnson has said.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic for him to try to appeal to be like the moderate now, because we're post-partisan primary. This is where you see a lot of candidates shift to the middle, and I just don't understand. I don't see the lane for Senator Johnson to do that, but, you know, there's been, in 2016, it seemed like he was kind of the more of that outside. He wasn't taking the moderate appeal. He was standing by Trump, and in those last few weeks, millions of dollars got dumped into that campaign for his reelection the second time against Russ Feingold. And so I think it's going to be a very interesting race to watch. But one of the last aspects for this Senator Johnson Mandela Barnes matchup, I think the other aspect for Rojo is going to be taking kind of those. I just can't imagine the soundbite clips that are going to come in this next 90 days we've got. From his last 2 years since COVID came, like him having to hear his own words over and over again about that crazy, I think is going to be really, really fascinating. But Dan, one of the other things I think you pointed out with the data was the founding of the recombobulation area, with the correlation to that founding date to the approval, disapproval of Senator Johnson. And I just want to throw out there as well, the Devil's Advocates were starting and launching our stations between Milwaukee and Madison right around the same time. So I don't know if we can let you take full credit for that shift, but we might want to try to take some partial credit on that one as well.
Absolutely. You know, it's since 2019, his unfavorables are way up and his no opinion data is way down. Mm-hmm. So as people get to know Ron Johnson, they don't particularly like him.
No, and I think that's going to make a very interesting field for re-election this November. But outside of the U.S. Senate race that we are going to be hearing a lot about between now and November, there were also some other statewide races yesterday on the ballot. Primary decisions for, I believe, most of the statewide races were competitive besides the Democratic field for attorney general and for governor. Outside of that, I believe there was a race for all of these other races, or at least a competitive race. One of the interesting ones that, you know, did get pretty close, closer than the GOP's gubernatorial primary, was the GOP's attorney general primary. And this is an interesting race to keep an eye on as well, because Eric Toney, district attorney for Fond du Lac County, had been running for the, I believe he was the first candidate in the race. He was, I believe, pinned more as a moderate, not necessarily part of the Trump wing of the party. And some people got upset that he was really the only candidate in the race. And so Adam Jarkow, who had previously was, I believe, the only candidate to lose a state Senate map drawn by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald in 2011 to a Democrat. He lost it. It was an open seat, so it didn't count as one of the flipping ones. But he was running in this attorney general primary against Adam Jarkow, and he just narrowly lost yesterday, Dan. I'd love to hear your thoughts on what you think about that matchup and the matchup going forward of Attorney General Josh Call, incumbent Democrat, in the race going up against Eric Toney this November.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting result because Jarkow had a lot of money behind his race. So he was a well-funded candidate. He had a lot of key endorsements, you know, really played up. Like, I think there was an NRA endorsement that he really played up. But the fact that he lost, I mean, it's a very close race, but he did lose. Mm-hmm. He conceded in the race last night. It was interesting to see these Republican candidates concede on election night when the data is there. but I think, like you mentioned, he lost the state Senate seat that went 20 points in favor of the Republican when there was a different candidate a couple of years later when the Republicans flipped it back. And so it's just he's just not a successful candidate really at all. He lost a very winnable state Senate race and he lost a very winnable race for attorney general. Who knows what the future is going to hold for Mr. Adam Jarkow.
I was going to say, there's a handful of Republicans that were all very curious to see what little depths they go to after yesterday's results. I think Jarkow, Steen, Gableman, I have a feeling is going to be on that list. Rantham. I'm really looking forward to Gableman getting fired. Like I'm fingers crossed again, that I think is the best silver lining of all of yesterday's results is hopefully we're going to have an end to the charade that's been going on here in the state of Wisconsin, for the last 13 months. But yeah, I think the even split across the Republican, attorney general primary was pretty wild to me because it was, three candidates, 37.5% to Eric Toney, 36.9% to Adam Jarkow, and 25.6% to Karen Mueller, who Karen Mueller was one of the individuals that was like promoting ivermectin throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. I believe she was a part of a lawsuit to try to overturn the 2020 election results. So very fringe candidate, and she got 150,000 votes in the Republican primary for attorney general. Just shocking news there. But Eric Toney going on to take on incumbent attorney general Josh Call this fall. I think that's going to be another really important race to watch. The other aspect of that race, I think, that is it's fairly disgusting, and I was talking to you about it off air, Dan, but I want to mention it now as well, is Eric Toney, in an attempt, because he was more mainstream candidate. He was more of the moderate candidate, but in an attempt to be able to demonstrate his standing up to voter fraud, the accusations of widespread fraud, which he has contended along with the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty and other conservatives around the state, that there wasn't widespread fraud. But Eric Toney, as the Fond du Lac County District Attorney, has gone and tried to make a show out of prosecuting any instance of voter fraud that he can, including a woman who didn't have a permanent address. She moves around the state with her husband, who works on farms, and they use a P.O. box in Fond du Lac to receive their mail. And so since they didn't have a permanent address, and it was the address that she used the most, she put that down on her voter registration, which is illegal. But like Eric Toney threw the book at her just to kind of make an example that he was tough on voter fraud. And do you think we're going to see more cases like that, Dan, between now and November? Or do you think with Gableman getting fired that we can hopefully kind of finally put to bed the 2020 election in Wisconsin?
I mean, maybe they'll start moving towards the center a little bit post-primary. But I think one of the things that you have to remember is the people who are most fired up to vote this fall among the Republican Party are the people who buy into the ridiculous, insulting lie of a stolen election. You know, I don't think any of these Republican candidates can fully abandon that because A, you have Trump who is still saying all of this, and B, you have the most fired up wing of the party, the people who are going to be knocking doors and making calls and helping with campaigns up and down the ticket, who are the most fired up about this issue. I think, you know, you saw the poll at CPAC last week. They said the number one issue is election integrity. Tim Michaels in his rally with Trump said his number one priority as governor would be not the economy, not anything else, would be election issues.
He must have had several number one priorities, though. I heard him say job creation was a number one priority, but he wouldn't tie a number to it like former Governor Scott Walker did. So maybe he's got a little bit
smarter about that. Folks,
you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. No Brian this afternoon, but joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. And we're talking yesterday's Wisconsin primary results coming through today. Got a couple other races that we're going to talk about. Keep an eye on between now and November. Taking your phone calls as well. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Tangents with Luke and Brian. No Brian this afternoon, but joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. And we're just dissecting Wisconsin's 2022 fall partisan primary results. We've discussed a number of the races. Tim Michaels defeated Lieutenant Governor, or former Lieutenant Governor, Rebecca Clayfish in the Republican primary for nomination to governor. Going to take on incumbent Democrat Governor Tony Evers this fall. Mandela Barnes secured the nomination that was all but presumed to be his after the last 2 weeks of candidates dropping out and endorsing him. A variety of down ballot statewide races. But one of the other races that's going to be, I think it's going to have a lot of money pumped into it this next 3 months, 90 days, whatever. It's less than 3 months. It's November 8th.
What's today?
What day is today? It's August 10th. It's a Wednesday because we're thrown into shambles with all of the... Like, I think there was a really quiet period there of, like, no news as everybody was anticipating the election results, and that was a really nice time to live in. And then since then, it's just been like, okay, now we got to analyze and look at everything and no stone unturned and... Let's just talk. But it's great for the content that we need here at Devil Radio 92.7, the Shaw 101 FM, Bull Falls Radio 98.9 FM, and locally grown radio 97.5 FM. Growing that network, but it helps that we're talking about all these races. But the race that I'm referencing that's going to get a lot of money pumped into it between now and November, the 3rd Congressional District, incumbent Ron Kine, retiring, from Congress, finishing out this term, and believe it was a contested Republican primary, but Derek Van Orden was assumed to get the most votes. I think one other person had their name in the ring. Derek Van Orden was on the Capitol grounds on January 6, 2021, during the U.S. Capitol insurrection, and he is going to go up against Brad Path, state senator from La Crosse, who won that four-way competitive primary to receive the Democratic nomination in the 3rd CD. And this is going to be one heck of a race, Dan. Do you think that this is closer or a wider margin than the governorship will be this November?
Yeah, I don't know. That's hard to say. I think this is going to be one of the most competitive elections in the House, though. You know, it certainly will be the most competitive of any of the congressional races in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, Path is a candidate that I think it has a lot of history in that district, working for Kind as long as he did, now representing the La Crosse area in the state Senate. Pretty strong showing as well from Rebecca Cook, who got more than 30% of the vote. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what she does next as well. But I think, man, what a contrast between Path and Van Orden that it's going to be in this race. It really, you know, a soft-spoken Democrat who has history in the Obama administration and with Ron Kine.
And Herb Cole, too.
And guy who, like you said, he was on the grounds of the Capitol, and he's just, you know, kind of this unhinged online, extremely online a Republican personality. But he's raising a ton of money, and they know that is a real pickup opportunity for Republicans as they try to take back the House too. So folks in Eau Claire and La Crosse and everywhere around the 3rd District, and they're going to get a lot of ads this year.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of ads. I think it's going to be an interesting race to keep an eye on. I think I have a feeling that that is going to be a closer margin this November than the governor's race. I think if it truly comes down to how it is slightly off, though, because I don't believe it's the same exact lines drawn from last in 2020. We've had the redistricting since then. And so I think that will be an interesting dynamic to it. But Derek Van Orden almost unseated Ron Kind in 2020. And I have a feeling this is going to be the closest race statewide across Wisconsin.
Yeah, that was a district that Donald Trump won and Ron Kind won.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the, kind of a ticket split situation happening there. Now with Trump not on the ballot, does that change turnout? Does that change the larger calculus in the race? But it is a district that has been trending to the right in you know elections for basically the last decade.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a you know again it's a. It's the larger math for Democrats in the midterms is not good, right? This is just what happens nowadays during midterm races when your president's in office. It's just the opposite party does well in the midterms. That's how it does. So Democrats are fighting an uphill battle in this race, in the Senate race against Ron Johnson, and you know even to a certain extent in the gubernatorial race. I think Evers is on very, very strong standing. But I think there are going to be a lot of those midterm headwinds that, you know, they're going to have to look out for.
I think if Dark Brandon has anything to say about it, it's going to be more of a level playing field in these days. I'm sorry.
Well, we just got to get Dark Brandon involved and get his approval rating up to closer to 50%.
There you go. That would do it. I guess the only other statewide race that we didn't get a chance to dive into, the lieutenant governor ticket for Evers is going to be State Representative Sarah Rodriguez. And for Tim Michaels, it's going to be State Senator Roger Roth. And what are your thoughts on, I mean, Roth doesn't bring that much difference to Michaels' ticket, but what are your thoughts on the Rodriguez joining Evers on the ballot for the Democratic side?
Yeah, I think she'll be a good partner on that ticket. I think, you know, unlike what Republicans did with Jerkow running after getting creamed in a state Senate race, Rodriguez is one of the people who flipped a state assembly race in the Milwaukee area suburbs in kind of the Wauwatosa West Allis district.
Brookfield, I believe. And, I believe she's a Brookfield resident.
Yeah, Brookfield. And I think, you know, I think she will be able to speak to those type of voters, suburban Milwaukee area voters. And I think, you know, her background in the healthcare field is going to help her as well. So I think, you know, Evers Rodriguez sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I think having a public health expert on the ticket when we are still going to have aspects of the COVID-19 pandemic surrounding us this fall and winter, because the BA5 is ripping through the state and country currently. I think being able to address public health is a huge benefit, and I think it's going to be beneficial for the Evers campaign in his reelection efforts. Folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. No Brian this afternoon, but really appreciate Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. Dan, real quick, let's tell everybody how to find out more about your work when they're not on the New York Times.
You can find my column at the Recombobulation Area, published on Substack. Find me on Twitter at Dan R. Schaefer, where I sometimes tweet about politics, but I often tweet about the Bucks.
Often about the Bucks. And the Brewers are playing right now, too. So those guys are out there as well. This has been an excellent hour of radio, Dan. I really appreciate you joining me. Evan, thank you for boarding the show. I will be back tomorrow at 2 p.m. If you missed any portion of this show, go check out the podcast. It's on Apple and Spotify, as well as devilradio927.com. Talk to you tomorrow. Thanks, Dan.